Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, September 28th. Texas Dems, we aren't bad for oil and gas. Candidates say they want to work toward cleaner energy future and aren't looking to eliminate jobs that boost Texas economy. By Patrick Zvitek and Mitchell Furman, the Texas Tribune. In 2020, some Texas Democrats cringed as Joe Biden said during the final presidential debate that he would transition from oil, lending credence to Republican attacks that their party is a threat to the state's biggest industry. 2 years later, Texas Democrats are working to send a different message. With a war in Ukraine underscoring the need for domestic energy production, they are trumpeting the international importance of the state's oil sector and acknowledging the reality that it is not going away anytime soon. They still want to make sure that the state is working toward a cleaner, more renewable energy future, but their overall message toward the oil industry is one of solidarity, not hostility. In a recent interview, Democratic gubernatorial nominee Beto O'Rourke recalled an encounter with a woman at a town hall in Midland who said she never voted Democratic before and had 7 sons working in the oil field. She asked him what he would do to make sure they did not lose their jobs. "I said I'm going to fight to make sure that we continue to be the leader in oil and gas globally." Now more than ever, O'Rourke said, citing the war in Ukraine, "We're going to have to produce this somewhere. I want it to be Texas. I want the jobs to be here." Republicans scoff at such talk, suggesting that if Democrats' own positions do not sink them with voters who care about oil and gas, their unpopular president will. And Governor Greg Abbott in particular is campaigning relentlessly on O'Rourke's support as a 2020 presidential candidate for the Green New Deal, the aggressive plan to fight climate change championed by U.S. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Democrat, New York. "Texas oil and gas industry is essential to the state's economy. The sector employed nearly 203,000 people as of July, an 11-year high, and generated $15.8 billion in tax revenue during fiscal year 2021, helping fund public schools, roads, and more." Texas Republicans have long sworn unwavering support for the industry, while the state's Democrats have had to walk a finer line as they weigh the environmental concerns inside their party. Ed Longenecker, president of the Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association, said he sees a general understanding and appreciation among state candidates for the critical role our industry plays in the state from an economic and energy security perspective. "Anti-oil and gas rhetoric is elevated during every election cycle from those that choose to politicize our energy security, especially at the federal level," Longenecker said in an email. "Fortunately, Texas is still a strong and oil-gas state, and I believe the candidates that support our industry will do well overall in the upcoming elections." Democrats are embracing the oil and gas industry beyond the governor's race, too. The Democratic nominee for Lieutenant Governor, Mike Collier, is planning to spend the closing weeks of the race emphasizing his long resume in the industry, starting out as a landman for ExxonMobil. Collier released a TV ad Tuesday that leans into his oil and gas background. The commercial opens with Collier introducing himself and saying, "I'm a businessman and I built a Texas energy company. It's important for us to set the record straight that while Dan Patrick was a disc jockey, Mike was a landman working in Texas energy," Collier campaign manager Ali Zaidi said. "This is the sector he knows in and out." Patrick, who was a conservative talk radio host in Houston before running for office, has sought to tie Collier to Biden and his energy policies, especially given that Collier was the senior advisor to Biden's campaign in Texas. Jay Kleberg, the Democratic nominee for land commissioner, held an energy-related news conference last week in Corpus Christi, where he pitched improvements to existing operations that will usher in a new energy future for Texans. Introducing Clayburg, local city council member Roland Barrera said Clayburg is not bought and paid for by oil and gas, nor is he a servant of the Green New Deal. Farther down the ballot, the two most endangered Democrats in the congressional delegation, Representatives Henry Cuellar of Laredo and Vicente Gonzalez of McAllen, are openly campaigning on their support for the oil and gas industry. It is especially nothing new for Cuellar, whose critics have dubbed him Big Oil's favorite Democrat. Both Cuellar and Gonzalez pushed back earlier this year when Biden sent a letter to oil refiners suggesting they were profiting too much off of high gas prices. Gonzalez told Biden to stop the blame game when both voted in August to pass Biden's signature Inflation Reduction Act. They went out of their way to try to assuage concerns that it would adversely impact the oil and gas industry. I fought to make sure the oil and gas industry was not the prime target by D.C. elitists in the bill, Cuellar said in a statement, taking credit for ensuring that several harmful provisions to our Texas oil and gas companies were removed. Cuellar and Gonzalez are part of a group of Texas Democrats who have tried to advocate to congressional leadership and the White House for sensical energy policies, according to Jason Modglin, president of the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers. Maybe some of their national party will listen to them, said Modglin, who used to work as director of public affairs for Christy Craddock, a Republican Texas Railroad Commissioner who regulates the state's oil and gas industry. Particularly when some of these congressional proposals are anti-oil and gas, that's a difficult thing to oppose your party. The 2020 election season looms large over the current conversation. During the 2020 presidential primary, Democrats campaigned vigorously on their desire to wean the nation off fossil fuels. Then came Biden's debate comment, which came in response to then-President Donald Trump asking Biden if he would close down the oil industry. "Yes, I would transition," Biden replied. Luke Warford, the Democratic nominee for Railroad Commissioner, said Biden's comment had a real impact in Texas, and in particular a real impact on Latino Texans that work in the oil and gas industry. After the election, at least one prominent South Texas Democrat, then U.S. Representative Philemon Vela of Brownsville, openly blamed such rhetoric for Biden's underperformance in the region. What he said in that debate really landed as an attack on people's livelihoods, Warford said in an interview, and I think there is a lot of progress to be made by making the case that I, as a railroad commissioner, and Democrats are actually good for the economy of this state, but in particular good for people that work in the oil and gas industry. I'm spending a lot of time making that case. Warford said it is not just the war in Ukraine, but also the 2021 power grid collapse that shows we need Texas oil and gas more than ever before. After all, a majority of Texas power plants that produce electricity to power the grid run on natural gas. Even the most ambitious models looking at getting to net zero have continued oil and gas production for a long time, Warford said. Millions of Texans work in the industry. Texas oil and gas is going to be around for a long time. The question for me is how do we make oil and gas cleaner and lower emissions in the industry? Warford is running against Railroad Commissioner Wayne Christian. Like other Republicans on the ballot this fall, Christian sees the unpopular president as an overriding factor when it comes to any Democratic overtures to the oil and gas industry. My opponent would be a rubber stamp for Biden's anti-oil and gas Green New Deal agenda, Christian said in a statement, warning that economic problems would only be exacerbated if our oil and gas industry was overseen by a liberal Democrat. the oil and gas industry is front and center in the governor's race, where Abbott considers it one of his biggest contrasts with O'Rourke. Abbott and his campaign have most prominently criticized O'Rourke over multiple comments he made before and during his 2020 presidential campaign that expressed support for the Green New Deal. Anti-energy industry candidate Beto O'Rourke's support for the Green New Deal and curtailing oil and gas drilling destroy the Texas energy industry, killing hundreds of thousands of jobs in the process, Abbott campaign spokesperson Mark Miner said in one statement earlier this year. O'Rourke has declined to revisit his 2020 comments on the Green New Deal. Asked for a comment on them, his campaign provided a statement that did not address the Green New Deal. Instead, the campaign highlighted that O'Rourke, a former El Paso congressman, regularly worked with Republicans to protect and expand Texas energy dominance and energy independence. O'Rourke's campaign pointed out that, for example, he voted in 2015 to lift the ban on exporting oil. Beyond the Green New Deal, Abbott's campaign has cited O'Rourke's support for ending fracking on federal lands and instituting a cap-and-trade program. In a recent interview, O'Rourke noted there is little federal land in Texas and said he was proud of the innovation behind fracking, but I know that we can do it far more responsibly than we've done in the past. ExxonMobil Corp and Texas Alliance of Energy Producers have been financial supporters of the Texas Tribune, a nonprofit, nonpartisan news organization that is funded in part by donations from members, foundations, and corporate sponsors. Financial supporters play no role in the Tribune's journalism. Reporter Telegram debates to end campaign season. MISD candidates to debate on October 18th. City candidates to debate on October 20th. By Stuart Doreen. The Midland Reporter-Telegram will have debates the week before early voting that should help the undecided determine the City of Midland and Midland ISD candidates they want to vote for on November 8th. The Reporter-Telegram debates will bring candidates together to discuss issues of the day in a conversational style. The Midland ISD debates start at 7 p.m. October 18th inside the Carrasco Room at Midland College. Candidates for District 3, Tommy Bishop and Reagan Hinojos, District 5, Brandon Hodges and John Trischetti III, and District 6, Sarah Burleson and Carrie McNeil, will each have around 45 to 50 minutes to make their case for voters in Carrasco Room and watching live at the Reporter-Telegram's Facebook page. The City of Midland debates will include the District 4 and mayoral races. They're scheduled to start at 7 p.m. October 20th inside the Carrasco Room. Those running for the Midland City Council are Amy Stretcher Burks and Jim Garetti in District 4, and Lori Blong, Robert Allen Dixon, and Jerry Morales for mayor. In both cases, the forums will be broadcast live on the Reporter-Telegram Facebook page. Editor Stuart Doreen will be the moderator. The Reporter-Telegram welcomes anyone who wants to attend and learn more about the candidates. Other debates forums scheduled include League of Women Voters on October 6th, MISD, 5:30 to 6:30 p.m., and City of Midland, 6:45 to 7:45 p.m., inside the Carrasco Room, Basin PBS on October 11th, 13th, and 17th. The debates will be televised, MISD School Board from 7 to 8:30 p.m. on October 11th, Mayoral Forum from 7 to 8 p.m. on October 13th, and Midland City Council from 7 to 8 p.m. on October 17th. The Midland Republican National Hispanic Assembly will have forums on October 17th and 19th. The MISD candidates will go from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at the Spring Hill Suites, 5716 Deauville Boulevard. The Midland City Council forums will be from 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., mayor, on October 19th, and from 12:30 to 1:30 p.m., District 4. The Negro Business and Professional Women's Club of Midland, on October 22nd. The forums at the MLK Junior Community Center will include judges, school board, and city council candidates at 10 a.m., and mayoral candidates at 1 p.m. 2 weeks of early voting will start on October 24th. Election day for local and state races is set for November 8th. Texas-sized garage sale sneak peek. Shop for antiques, holiday decor, toys, and more to help senior life Midland. By Mercedes Cordero. The Texas-sized garage sale is back. The fundraiser benefiting Meals on Wheels and other programs at Senior Life Midland will start on October 7th. The early bird opening on October 7th has a $5 admission fee. The other dates, October 8th, 11th, and 13th, have free admission. The doors open at 9 a.m. and close at 3 p.m. each day at 407 East Scarborough Drive. Some of the items that will be available are antiques, holiday decor, toys, clothing, shoes, furniture, and more. Asleep at the Wheel, joined by the West Texas Symphony, Gary Lewis, music director and conductor. October 8th, 7:30 p.m., Wagner Knoll. Tickets $32 to $52, students $8. WTX.org. Phone 800-514-3849, Wagner Knoll Box Office. ECISD reports three more arrests. By Mercedes Cordero. Hector County ISD reported Monday three incident updates from Odessa schools. A Permian High School student was arrested by ECISD police for the threat made last week that circulated on social media over the weekend. Officers were told the image and threat were part of a group chat that was supposed to be a joke. Then it got airdropped to students throughout the district, according to the district. Following a fight at Nimitz Middle School, a seventh grader was overheard telling another student he would get a gun and shoot him. A 12-year-old student at the Alternative Center was also overheard telling another student he would bring a gun to school tomorrow and shoot him. All three students were arrested and charged with the threat or exhibition of a weapon on school grounds or bus, a Class A misdemeanor. They will also be facing school disciplinary action, according to ECISD. These arrests follow a series of arrests last week for similar incidents. We have been communicating with parents and students about the severity of consequences for this type of behavior, ECISD said in a statement. All threats are taken seriously, and if found to be true, will result in criminal charges and school discipline. School and school district leaders continue to remind parents to please have this critical conversation with your children. Threats and violence will not be tolerated. ECISD reports fourth student arrest of week. By Mercedes Cordero. A fifth-grade student at Cameron Elementary School was arrested Tuesday after telling two students he was going to shoot up the school, according to Hector County ISD. The threat was reported by the student, and the fifth grader was subsequently arrested by ECISD police. He was charged with a threat or exhibition of a weapon on school grounds or bus, a Class A misdemeanor. School and school district leaders do not have an explanation as to why kids are making these statements regularly, but they will always be taken seriously, and if found to be true, the student or students will be arrested and criminally charged. We sincerely appreciate the students and staff members who have reported hearing these threats, the district said in a statement. ECISD officials reported Monday the arrests of three students for similar threats. Millions of Americans to save on Medicare fees next year. By Amanda Seitz, Associated Press, Washington. For the first time in a decade, Americans will pay less next year on monthly premiums for Medicare's Part B plan, which covers routine doctor's visits and other outpatient care. The rare 3% decrease in monthly premiums is likely to be coupled with a historically high cost of living increase in Social Security benefits, perhaps 9% or 10%, putting hundreds of dollars directly into the pockets of millions of people. "That's something we may never see again in the rest of our lives," said Mary Johnson, the Social Security and Medicare policy analyst for the Senior Citizens League. "That can really be used to pay off credit cards, to restock pantries that have gotten low because people can't afford to buy as much today as they did a year ago, and do some long postponed repairs to homes and cars." The 2023 decrease in monthly Medicare premiums comes after millions of beneficiaries endured a tough year of high inflation and a dramatic increase to premiums this year. Most people on Medicare will pay $164.90 a month for Part B coverage starting next year, a savings of $5.20. The decrease helps to offset last year's $21.60 spike, which was driven in large part by a new Alzheimer's drug, Aduhelm, administered intravenously in doctor's offices and introduced to the market last year with a $56,000 price tag. Medicare set strict limitations on the drug's use earlier this year, and the drug maker has since cut the medication's cost in half. Medicare paid less for that drug than it expected this year, helping shore up reserves that allowed the agency to set the Part B premiums lower for 2023, the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare said in a statement Tuesday. Other Medicare services and items were lower than expected, too, but Medicare officials did not respond to the Associated Press questions for details on those savings. President Joe Biden lauded the lower Medicare premiums during a Rose Garden speech Tuesday. As the midterm elections near and Biden's administration struggles to contain the painful side effects of inflation, the White House has increasingly trumpeted its work around curtailing health care costs. To millions of seniors and people with disabilities on Medicare, that means more money in their pockets while still getting the care they need, Biden said. Biden pointed to more cost savings on the way for some Medicare recipients starting next year, thanks to the Inflation Reduction Act, which will require Medicare to cover the cost of recommended vaccines for older Americans and will cap monthly insulin copayments at $35 per month. Other provisions in the legislation, including a rule that allows Medicare to negotiate directly with drug companies on the price of some medications, will take a few years to kick in. The bill received no support from congressional Republicans, a talking point the White House has frequently pushed in speeches and across its social media accounts in recent weeks. Republicans have a different slant on the subject. "Desperation is setting in at the White House," the Republican National Committee said in a response to Biden's speech Tuesday. "Voters have a clear choice in the midterms as they know Biden and the Democrats sent costs for groceries soaring, created a recession, and increased taxes. The lower Medicare premiums were announced as 66 million Americans await the announcement of next year's Social Security cost of living increase for 2023. Analysts estimate that it could be historic, roughly between 9 and 10%. The exact amount will be announced next month. Obituaries and death notice from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Wednesday. Aaron Bailey Wilson, age 84, of Wiley's Cove, Arkansas, passed away peacefully at his home on Friday, September 23rd. He was born in Dickinson, Texas, on January 19, 1938, to Albert Bailey Wilson and Bertie Mae Keyes Wilson. Survivors include his wife of 62 years, Sally Seeger Wilson, of the home, his son Aaron Wilson and wife Leela of Lubbock, daughter Susan Pendleton and husband Jay of Little Rock, grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Aaron was preceded in death by his parents, Albert and Bertie Wilson, and siblings Bruce Wilson, Bob Wilson, and Joanne Wilson Miller. Funeral services for Aaron will be 11 a.m. Thursday, September 29th at Leslie United Methodist Church in Leslie, Arkansas, with Brother Tom Mullins officiating. Visitation will be 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. preceding the service. Burial will be in Leslie Cemetery. Online guestbook is www.rollerfuneralhomes.com/Marshall. Lovick Clark Lindley, aged 85 years, 6 months, died peacefully at his home in Midland on September 22nd. He was born in Pecos, Texas. Clark will be buried on Thursday, September 29th at 11:30 a.m. alongside his parents and among many Lindley family members at Hillcrest Cemetery in Temple, Texas. Clark is survived by his brother Harold Norman Lindley, life partner Tip Chesney, nephew Courtney Lindley, and cousins. Clark was preceded in death by his parents Dr. Harold and Madge Lindley, and cherished nephew, Heath Lindley. In lieu of flowers, please acknowledge Clark by giving to a charity of your choice or Hospice of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Mary Patricia Pat Crow Blomqvist died peacefully Friday, September 16th. The beloved wife, mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother was born to Mary and Judson A. Crow in San Antonio on November 15, 1929. She married Dr. Brent Garland Blomqvist in 1953. Survivors include her daughter Jennifer O'Connor and son-in-law John of Dallas, sons Tim Blomqvist and daughter-in-law Lisa of San Antonio, and Kevin Blomqvist and daughter-in-law Emily of Midland. 8 grandchildren, and 17 great-grandchildren, and nieces and nephews. Sisters-in-law Kay Blomqvist and Jean Crow of Dallas. Pat was a member of the Episcopal Church of the Holy Trinity, where her memorial service will be held Saturday, October 1st at 2 p.m. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that memorials be directed to Holy Trinity Episcopal Church, 1412 West Illinois Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701, or the Midland Memorial Foundation in the name of Dr. Brent and Pat Blomqvist Infant and Children's Endowment Fund. To place online condolences, please visit www.npwelch.com. John F. Shepherd, Jr., 70, of Midland, passed away September 26th. A service will be held at a later date. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Hello, this is Cindy. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Wednesday, September 28th. Parents indicted in infant son's death. Father accused of strangling and beating 7-month-old by Kim Smith. The father of a 7-month-old baby who died in July and who told authorities he accidentally dropped the child is now accused of strangling and beating the boy. He's also accused of tampering with a witness. According to indictments handed down last week in the 70th Ector County District Court, Logan Pearson was struck in the head on multiple occasions and sustained a broken hyoid bone while being strangled. His father, Cameron Gamage, is accused of committing those acts and throwing the child up into the air and dropping him on the ground. Gamage, 23, was indicted on one count of capital murder of a person under 10, injury to a child, and tampering with a witness. According to that indictment, 1 month after his son's death, he tried to convince a woman to either withhold her testimony or provide false testimony as to his whereabouts on the day Logan was found dead. Gamage has remained in jail since his arrest July 12th. His bond has been increased to $1,550,000. Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan said he has not decided if he will seek the death penalty for Gamage, but declined to comment further. The child's mother, Lila Grace Pearson, 18, was indicted last week on 2 counts of injury to a child. According to the indictment, she's accused of placing her son in an environment which allowed Gamage to commit the acts that led to the child's death, and she failed to seek medical treatment for the boy's head injuries. Originally arrested July 12th, she was released from jail July 14th after posting a bond of $100,000. She was rearrested Monday, and she remained in custody as of Tuesday morning on bonds totaling $200,000. Odessa police received a 911 call about a baby who wasn't breathing at 12:52 p.m. July 12th from the Brady Station Apartments in the 4200 block of East 52nd Street. When they arrived, they found the baby, who would have turned 8 months old on July 23rd, deceased, with heavy bruising and swelling to the left side of his face and head and smaller bruises along the top of his cranium. An Odessa Police Department report indicates Pearson told officers she fed her son around 5 a.m. July 12th and woke up around noon to find him not breathing. Gamage told police he has extreme anger issues and admitted he dropped his son while playing catch with him 3 days before the child died. Gamage said the baby had been crying a lot and causing him stress, according to the report. He also admitted to strangling 2 dogs recently and disposing of their bodies to avoid getting into trouble. In Gamage's arrest affidavit, police wrote Gamage remained unemotional and seemed to lack care about the incident throughout contact. Initially, Gamage told authorities his son had hit his head on a hard portion of the interior of his crib. Eventually, however, Gamage told police he and Pearson smoked marijuana on Saturday, and while Pearson was sleeping, Logan began to cry, so he decided to toss him into the air to get him to stop crying. Cameron claimed he accidentally dropped the infant after the 4th toss, which caused the infant to land on his left side. Cameron reported the infant hit the floor hard when he landed. Pearson told authorities that when she asked Gamage about the baby's injuries, he told her Logan had probably hit his head on the hard part of the crib. She assumed his fussiness over the next few days was due to teething. Online jail records show Gamage is also being held on a sexual assault of a child charge out of Andrews County. According to the Andrews Police Department, they began investigating Gamage in August 2021 for offenses that were alleged to have occurred in 2019 and 2020 when the alleged victim was 15 years of age. He was indicted on May 19th. Family members have said the alleged victim in the Andrews case is Pearson. No contested city races on November ballot, by Kim Smith. A local pastor has dropped out of the race for Odessa City Council District 5. As a result, 3 out of 7 people on the council will have attained their seats without facing an opponent. Originally, Shay Lane, an associate pastor at River of Hope, was expected to run against Chris Haney, a salesman for Emory Industrial Services. In announcing her decision, Lane said, "Chris Haney has my full support. I trust him. I believe in him." Earlier this month, the council declared Gilbert Vasquez and Greg Connell the winners of November's city council election, since they were the only candidates to run for District 3 and District 4, respectively. Vasquez and Connell will take their seats November 22nd. Haney will, too, if the council opts to declare him the winner at a future council meeting. District 5 Councilmember Mary Willis, District 3 Councilmember Detra White, and District 4 Councilmember Tom Sprawls announced a couple of months ago they wouldn't be running for re-election in November. Interested parties had until August 22nd to turn in their applications to run for the open seats. Lane, 50, is also an office assistant for Stark Surveying. The married mother of two and grandmother of three was born and raised in Odessa. Shortly after filing her application, Lane said she wanted to bridge the gap she believes exists between Odessans and government officials. Haney is a married father of three girls and has three grandchildren, who is also a greeter and prayer partner at Odessa Christian Faith Center. He said he wants to bring God back to our government and would like Odessa to be a sanctuary city from abortions. He named roads and waters as his top priorities. Connell, a 67-year-old retiree and U.S. Marine Corps veteran, ran a work furlough program for the California Department of Corrections for 4 years. He also worked for Henderson Enterprises in California and spent years in banking. Most recently, Connell, the father of one adult son, volunteered at Downing Elementary. Connell said he's discovered Odessans are concerned about crime and infrastructure and hopes to help address those issues. Vasquez spent more than 30 years as an administrator within the Ector County Independent School District, and he decided to step up and run after discovering no one else was. When he announced his candidacy, Vasquez said he'd like people to know he's open-minded and a team player. I will be a servant. I will be a listener for them. Whatever decisions I find myself having to be a part of, they will always be in the best interest of the people of Odessa, Texas, he said. Number of homeless students grows. The number of students considered homeless in Ector County ISD has risen significantly over last year, Director of Community Support Services Scott Randolph said. Last year, there were 559, and as of August 11, 2022, there were 980. Some 80% are families that are living doubled up, according to the federal definition they have to go by, Randolph said. About 80% of them are two or more families living together out of economic hardship or loss of housing. Then we have a big group in small pull trailers, RVs, Randolph said. Some people who are living in RVs have good jobs in the oil field, so they aren't really homeless, he said. We kind of tried to weed those out and make sure that they're really having economic hardship while they're in them, he added. He said only a handful are living in their cars or on the streets. You won't see very many of those. When we do see somebody in that dire situation, we're usually able to try to get them into some type of housing, whether it be a hotel for a few days before they can get into some other housing. But a couple of weeks ago, we did have a mom in here with two or three kids. She was sleeping in her car and really struggling. But again, those are a handful, five to five or less families, Randolph said. Usually, the younger they are, the more family and friends they have to stay with. It's usually the ones that are a little bit older that have gotten out on their own that they don't have as many resources to go back to, Randolph said. However, the Community Outreach Center, where Randolph's office is, can help. We'll try to link them to resources. We do have social workers here, social service specialists that, like the lady that was in her car, we were able to, not with school district funds, but with a private donor, able to get them a hotel room for a few days and help them with their deposit to get into an apartment, Randolph said. Randolph said they let the counselors at the campuses know what the children are going through, so hopefully they can offer help. Usually, once the caseworker starts helping them, they'll develop a relationship and they're more likely to reach out to them. We have a food bank here We have a clothes closet, school supplies, and so they're more likely to come back and see us whenever they need something, Randolph said. The Community Outreach Center also helps people register their children for school. They usually don't have proof of address because they're living doubled up, he said. It's good it's here, not good that there's the need for it, but there's a big need for it, that's for sure, he said. During COVID, enrollment was down, so a lot of people just stayed low and didn't come back. I think it suppressed homeless numbers across the state, and I can't say why that is, but I'm sure they did research on it at the state level to figure out why that was, Randolph said. Quick hits. Army Secondary Infantry Division Reunion. The 2nd Infantry Division Association is seeking for veterans who served in the Army's Secondary Infantry Division at any time. For information about the association and 99th annual reunion today through Sunday in Kansas City, Missouri, contact Mike DeVino at 919-498-1910. Story time. The Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled story time from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Wednesdays through October 26th in the Children's Department. For more information, call 432-332-0633 or visit ector.lib.tx.us. Bivalent COVID Vaccine Booster Clinic. Midland Health has scheduled a COVID-19 vaccination booster clinic from 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. today at the F. Marie Hall Outpatient Center, 4214 Andrews Highway, Midland. Ages 12 and over will be admitted. Only the Pfizer bivalent booster will be available, and primary series vaccinations will not be available. No money will be collected from any patient. However, an administration fee may be charged to your insurance if you are insured. Pre-registration is required. Local News Roundup. Odessan accused in aggravated assault. An argument over music lyrics led to an Odessa man being arrested on an aggravated assault charge Friday. According to an OPD report, a 32-year-old woman came into the station around 3 a.m., September 8th, and told officers she thought her foot was broken during an argument with her boyfriend of 8 months, Andrell Tysian Williams, 38. The woman said she had just set off on a business trip to New Mexico with Williams when she told him to turn off the music they were listening to because the singers were cussing. The two began arguing, and she told him their relationship was over, and she needed them to turn around and go back to his house in the 1800 block of Big Easy Street so she could collect her belongings. While at the house, the woman told officers she was on the outside of the truck, reaching in to get $6,000 and a key, when Williams began to drive off, causing her to be dragged by the truck. According to the report, the woman kept yelling at him to stop, and he did so, but only after she managed to get back inside. An officer took pictures of the woman's left foot, which was swollen, bruised, and appeared to have road rash on it. The report indicated an officer also saw red marks on her left knee and shoulders. The woman said the shoulder injuries were caused by Williams grabbing her. Officers obtained surveillance footage from a nearby neighbor which corroborated the woman's story. Calls to Williams went unanswered. Williams was arrested Friday on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a Class 2 felony, punishable by a prison term of 2 to 20 years. He was released from the Ector County Jail Sunday after posting a $30,000 surety bond. Odessan accused of assault. A 47-year-old Odessa man was arrested Monday night on assault charges after neighbors heard shouting from his home. According to an OPD report, residents of the 7200 block of Wagner Ranch Road called 911 around 10:30 p.m. Monday after hearing shouts. When officers arrived, they found Jose Perez smelling of alcohol near his garage, and he told them he had been arguing with his wife before becoming belligerent and refusing to say anything else. Perez's wife, 36, told officers Perez punched her several times and pushed her as she was bathing a one-year-old boy, causing her to nearly fall into the bathtub. Officers saw fresh scrapes and scratches on the child's back, and the woman said she isn't sure if Perez scratched the child or if she accidentally did when she was attacked. Officers obtained a video taken during the bathing that showed Perez push the woman from behind. Perez was arrested on suspicion of injury to a child and assault, causing bodily injury. Injury to a child is a state jail felony, punishable by 6 months to 2 years in prison, and the other charge is a misdemeanor. He remained in the Ector County Jail Tuesday in lieu of surety bonds totaling $8,500. Pregnant woman accused of using meth. A 30-year-old Odessa woman was arrested Monday, nearly 6 months after being indicted for allegedly using methamphetamine while pregnant. Matrosa Henderson was booked into the Ector County Jail on a single charge of abandonment, endangerment of a child. According to the indictment, back in February, she intentionally, knowingly, recklessly, or with criminal negligence engaged in conduct that put her child in danger by using meth while pregnant. The indictment was issued March 30th, and she was arrested by the Ector County Sheriff's Office Monday. She remained in the Ector County Jail Tuesday on a $7,500 surety bond. FIDE investigation continues at UTPB. The University of Texas Permian Basin continues to investigate a fight that broke out Saturday during a soccer game on campus. At least one video of the disturbance was posted on Facebook, but no arrests have yet been made. UT Permian Basin is currently investigating a situation that happened at our men's soccer game over the weekend. UTPB is working closely with the visiting team, Dallas Baptist University, and the Lone Star Conference to understand the events that took place. Alexa Dunson, a spokeswoman for the university, wrote in an email, "Our university, along with DBU and Lone Star Conference, promote an exceptional and expect exceptional sportsmanship from not only our student athletes but also visitors. UTPB does not condone fighting, heckling, or violence of any kind from our students, student athletes, and visitors. Once the investigation into this incident is complete, UTPB will take the appropriate actions," Todd Dooley, UT Permian Basin's Director of Athletes, wrote in a statement released Tuesday. Finding cultural objects, a labor of love. Robert M. Edsel has taken many turns in his life, from oil and gas businessman to best-selling author and art preservation advocate. The author and art preservation advocate are what brought him to Odessa this week to speak at the John Ben Shepherd Public Leadership Institute Distinguished Lecture Series Tuesday at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Edsel speaks 20 or more times a year in the United States and in Europe. During World War II, the Nazis looted tens of millions of cultural objects and art from museums, churches, and private collections across Europe. A small group of American and British men and women, museum curators, scholars, architects, archivists, librarians, and some even artists themselves, were tasked with finding it all. They became known as the Monuments Men, and their mission became the greatest treasure hunt in history. Edsel authored the hero's true story in his number one New York Times best-selling book, The Monuments Men, and worked with George Clooney to bring it to film. Edsel is an internationally renowned advocate of protecting cultural works and restoring fine art to its rightful owners. He said the movie accomplished a key objective for him. It achieved what my hope was, which was to bring global recognition to who these men and women were and make the world aware of a whole other aspect of World War II, of how much was hanging in the balance. And again, wondering this question of what would the world have been like had things turned out differently, had the destruction consumed so many of these things, Edsel said. When you have a film made by George Clooney and a cast like that, which he assembled with Cate Blanchett and Bill Murray and Matt Damon and so on, we had a film shown in 100 countries around the world. The book's been translated into 30 different languages, and as I said, it's out there in the public lexicon. Monuments Men and Women. As you know, we live in the most over-messaged world that you can imagine, and getting a phrase in the global lexicon is no small feat, but it's there, Edsel added. Edsel, who now lives in Dallas, was raised in Texas and started his career in the oil industry. He founded Gemini Exploration, which pioneered the use of horizontal drilling technology and became one of the most active drillers of U.S. horizontal wells in the mid-90s. In an interview Tuesday morning, Edsel said he was in the exploration business for about 16 years from the time he was 23 until age 39. He went to the University of Georgia and two community colleges in Dallas and finished at Southern Methodist University. He earned a degree in finance. But as I said, I was just eager to get out, Edsel said. He decided to go to Florence, Italy to study art and architecture. At the time, Edsel said, there were 40 different American universities with campus representation in Florence. So there were a lot of art history professors that had time on their hands. He hired one of them to go around the city with him on Wednesdays, and that was the start. Edsel said he gets curious about things by seeing something or wondering about something. Then I start digging into it, and when I get interested, yes, I'll read everything I can get my hands on, he said. But that's not my path usually into stuff. It's more wondering or tinkering with something, and that curiosity then drives it. He and his wife have the Monuments Men and Women Foundation. Edsel has a son from his first marriage and two boys, 4 and 6, with his second wife, Anna, who is president of the foundation. She is from Florence. Its website says the Monuments Men and Women Foundation has found and returned more than 30 cultural objects and artwork since its inception. The foundation's toll-free tip line is 1-866-WWII-ART, provides a simple path for those who may be in possession or have knowledge of missing objects to come forward with vital information. Callers can remain anonymous, and the foundation will assist in the object's restitution. The foundation has 5 people on staff. We have performed miracles with a very, very, very small staff, and I'm immensely proud of what they've done over these years. We could be doing a lot more to help a lot more people, but getting funding is just very, very difficult. My wife and I have put our life savings into keeping the foundation going. My time is 100% volunteered. I don't seek any compensation. I never have. We have had some people come forward from time to time who have made gifts, but it's really the biggest challenge that we face. We have an easier time finding and returning stolen objects than we do raising money for it, Edsel said. He has been pleased that the Army has reconstituted a Monuments Men and Women force. Edsel said it's very much needed, and now they're under attack in Ukraine and other conflict areas. That's a problem that's never going to go away unless we figure out how to end war, and I don't foresee that happening, Edsel said. County issues disaster declaration for border security by Royal McGregor. After more than 15 minutes of discussion, the Ector County Commissioners voted 4-1 to approve a declaration of local disaster to secure the border. The motion was initiated by Mike Gardner, the Commissioner for Precinct 1, and seconded by Precinct 2 Commissioner Greg Simmons. Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes and Precinct 3 Commissioner Don Stringer both voted in favor of the disaster declaration. The lone dissenting vote came from Armando Rodriguez, the commissioner for Precinct 4, after he said he believed the disaster declaration was done for political purposes. Hayes explained her decision for voting in favor of the disaster declaration was due to the testimony from Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths. The sheriff needs help, Hayes said after Tuesday's regularly scheduled meeting. He needs either DPS to come and help him out in the county, outside city limits, or the reserves to come help him. Ector County Republican Party Chair Tish Crow and Griffiths spoke to the court about the disaster declaration. Griffiths said it's sad where we are headed and it's sad where we are at. There's a lot of stuff the general public doesn't know what's going on in this country, Griffiths said during the meeting. If they knew, it would probably scare the fire out of them. Rodriguez, after Tuesday's regularly scheduled meeting, doubled down on those politically motivated claims. Rodriguez is the lone Democrat on the court. He said this agenda item was presented earlier this month, and there has been ample time to present plans how to combat drug and human trafficking, but no plans have been presented to the court. The disaster declaration would last for 7 days. The commissioners would renew the declaration on Monday. Rodriguez said if there was a plan to combat the drug and human trafficking, that he would be in favor of it, but he said there's no plan in place. They had 20 days and they had already been discussing it, Rodriguez said. By this time, they should already have information to back it up and give us all the details. They didn't have the details. They were only talking to one side of the party. They didn't take time to talk to me. We can imagine there's a problem, but if you don't have anything to back it up, you can't say there's a problem. Commissioners also heard Ector County Utility District President Tommy Irvin talk about current and upcoming projects. Irvin said he hopes ECUD will be finished with Tripp Avenue from 3rd Street to 42nd Street by the end of October, and it's paved by Thanksgiving. He said most of the projects that ECUD will focus on over the next 12 to 18 months will be ones paid for by the ARPA funds. During its annual budget meetings in early August, commissioners awarded $10 million of ARPA funds to ECUD. Irvin said the first project will use ARPA funds will be near G.E. Buddy West Elementary School on Sycamore Drive. That project will help not only with the flow of water in that area, but there's a hydrant that we flush about 25,000 gallons a month out of that. We will finish flushing that hydrant, Irvin said during the meeting. We won't be wasting any more water there again. It will help with firefighting protection of the school. At the start of Tuesday's meeting, Ector County Independent School District Superintendent Dr. Scott Murray gave a presentation about the Con-Ector Task Force regarding state funding options to expand broadband to residents in Ector County. Murray said the project is estimated at $90 million. Murray said 25% of the cost would have to come from the community, while the other 75% could be paid by the federal government. Murray told commissioners he also asked funds to be provided by the City of Odessa, and he said he also received philanthropic interest. Murray called it a grassroots effort.